What's up? It's Delaney, and I'd love to invite you to become an honorary co-host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Do you want to pick episode topics and guests? Done. Want to surprise your loved ones with shout-outs on the show for a birthday, project launch, a much-needed divorce? Whatever you're up to, would love to be a part of the celebration. Get your favorite and least favorite quotes featured on the podcast, submit questions for our special guests, and find lots more new features and surprises at patreon.com/selfhelpless. You'll also get added to our Patreon Insider email list to easily redeem rewards via a quick email reply. Because we know hanging out on Patreon isn't everyone's thing. You can also opt out of emails if you prefer to be a silent supporter of the show. And don't worry, we do not Scrooge McDuck these contributions. 100% of proceeds go directly to operating expenses that make this weekly podcast possible and available to all. Learn more at patreon.com/selfhelpless or simply click the link in this episode's description. Thank you for helping me fill the void of being the last standing host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Thank you so much.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Self-Helpless podcast. I'm Kelsey Cook.
I'm Delaney Fisher.
And today we have such a fantastic guest on, you guys. We have on Aparna Nancherla, and she did an incredible interview with us all about her new book called Unreliable Narrator. Yes. So, yeah, we just loved talking to her so much. If you don't know Aparna, she is such an established comedian, actor, and writer. Her writing has appeared on Late Night with Seth Meyers, Broad City, Ghostbusters. She has been featured on Two Dope Queens, Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and Conan. And she can currently be seen in Peacock's Lopez vs. Lopez and the latest season of HBO Max's Search Party and Netflix's Space Force. I mean,
yeah, Comedy Central, all the things.
Netflix. Yes. I mean, she is everywhere. Like, it's so amazing how just how incredible her career is. So, and then her book of personal essays called Unreliable Narrator comes out tomorrow, September 19th. So, yeah, it is a hilarious and introspective collection of essays by Aparna exploring her life as a shy comedian battling depression, anxiety, and self-doubt. And she opened up to us about all of those things and more in our interview. So, we hope you guys enjoy the interview with her. Before we get into it, just a few things to plug. So this is coming out on September 18th. So I am going to be in Louisville, Kentucky at the end of this month, September 28th through the 30th. Then in October, I will be in Spokane and Cleveland. In November, I will be in Grand Rapids, D.C., Nashville, Huntsville, and Atlanta. And then in December, I will be in Boston and Tampa. So if you are in any of those cities or nearby, go to kelseycook.com, get a tour date ticket. Pretty please.
Yes. And you can tune into my other podcast, Career Crush, at DelaneyFisher.com. It's currently a private show, but it's completely free. And we just talk about how to find the career path that's going to make you feel, you know, the most happy, fulfilled, purposeful, all that good stuff. What I'm loving right now about the people I'm interviewing is so many of these people have never, ever done a podcast before. So they are actually exclusive interviews. Like, they're not talking about their career or their experiences anywhere else. They're not hitting the podcast circuit. They're just like, I live on a boat and this is my life, you know?
Whatever. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just really, really enjoying hearing everybody's perspectives on what makes them happy, whether it's a really kind of out there career path or something more conventional, but they're doing something on the side that makes them really, you know, feel good. So head on over to DelaneyFisher.com if you want to tune in and be a part of that community over there. Really fun.
That's so cool. I love that you're doing that.
Thank you. I love it. It's so much. I just want to do it. I still kind of all I want to do is like podcast, this podcast and that podcast. Yeah. And I'm hoping I can just like do that for a while.
Yeah.
And not really have to worry about other things.
Yeah. It sounds like your other podcast, a lot of the concept is like finding happiness, which is
totally,
it's really
totally
cool. Really cool.
Mm-hmm. And it's like the career part is like a tool for that, but it's also like, you know, what you do in your outside of your job. But yeah, it's fun.
Well, I'm very happy for you. And
thanks. Right back at you, babe.
Thank you. Okay, without further ado, here is our interview with Aparna.
Aparna, thank you so much for being here today. We are so excited to chat with you.
Thank you for having me on.
Yes. So before we get into all the juice and imposter syndrome and all that good stuff, do you have a favorite or least favorite quote?
Okay, so I was told to bring a favorite or least favorite quote, and I would consider myself what you might call a quote fiend. I love a good quote.
I think
you're in the right place. Same page. Okay. Yes. So I was kind of stressed to think of my favorite quote. So I brought with you my most recent favorite quote.
I love it.
Okay, great. So this comes from Hanif Abdurraqib, who's like a poet. Amazing writer based out of Ohio. And I was reading an interview with him and this is the quote. He says, "My superpower is that I mind my own business. And I actually think that helps my productivity more than anything." And yeah, and I sort of took it to mean, because I kind of course, was like, what do I think that means to me? And I think for me, it was kind of like not worrying about what other people are doing, kind of just looking, you know, eyes on your own paper. And that, but just the way he put it felt a lot more eloquent than I had seen it before.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Like not the comparison trap, right?
Of
like,
they're
doing this and I'm not as good as this, or what am I doing? Yeah. That's such a good one. We have done full episodes on quotes that we love. So
yes,
I'm glad that you know, it makes sense. It was hard for you to pick your favorite, because that's how I feel too.
Yeah. My only New Year's resolution, I told myself, just make one so you can try to actually stick to it this time, is just to care less what people think of me. Not even to like not care, because I know for me that's probably asking too much, but just to care less what people think of me. And I love how your quote talks about that it feels like he's more productive that way, because I do think if you can just put it aside a little bit, caring what people think of you, you do get more done.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like minding one's own business, I feel like there's sort of a wide interpretation of what that could mean. Because it's also like we're not worrying about what other people are doing, not worrying what other people are thinking about you or saying about you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It works.
Awesome. So congrats on your book, by the way.
Thank
that's very
so
exciting. So cool. Imposter syndrome is a big theme in the book. I would love to know, what is like your first memory of experiencing imposter syndrome, if you have one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't think of a memory from my childhood where I didn't feel maybe like I didn't fit in, or I somehow like didn't get the memo that everyone else got, or just like I constantly feel like I've always approached the world as though I'm like catching up to everyone else. Like when you are out sick from school and then you come back and you're like, wait, what are we doing?
Oh,
like
this
unit, or like, what are people wearing now? Like, I always feel like I've been trying to like figure it out after everyone else did. Yeah. So I think, I don't even know if I have like one specific memory, but just like several memories of like, I don't know, like I went to a private school in elementary school, and I remember like all the cool girls, like we would usually wear uniforms, and then occasionally we would get like free dress day where you got to wear whatever you wanted. And then that would be like a whole stressful thing of deciding what you were going to wear that day. But then I remember like all the cool girls coordinated their outfits, and I was just, how did they
know?
Like, how did they know to even, you know, operate this way? It's so advanced.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That is so fascinating to me, because I remember being a kid, I felt like I didn't really have imposter syndrome. And then it became unbearable as an adult.
Yeah.
It's almost like I felt like things as a kid felt more measurable to me in a way, where it's like, if I won an award for something, it was because I really did get the best grades on that thing. Or I hit the most home runs. It was like this measurable thing.
Yes.
And then I feel like as I got older, when things felt more arbitrary or less measurable, it was like, I had a really hard time with that. And I felt like I didn't deserve things. I felt guilty, all of that stuff. So thank you for sharing that. That's such an interesting perspective that you kind of felt that way.
I mean, it's in writing the book, I actually talked to, you know, a couple of friends. Like, I just sent out like an informal survey of just like how it had show imposter syndrome has shown up in their life. And it did feel like that's pretty common, that like when it first came up for people was like early on in their careers, where they feel like they haven't quite like, you know, figured out what they're doing or like have enough experience to back themselves up. So I think that is like, did seem to be the most frequent place, like early adulthood, when it first like really comes up strong.
Yeah. That's so interesting. So interesting.
So this is your first book, correct?
Yes. Yes.
I am curious, what was one of the biggest challenges for you just in writing it? Did you find that you were feeling imposter syndrome even in creating it? Or like, do you have an easy time focusing? We talk a lot on the show about stuff with ADHD and any ways that we can find to tap into focus if we're having a hard time. Did you struggle with stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, I so relate to people of ADHD, and I'm like, I feel like I have it, but I don't think I have it. I think I have anxiety induced like lack of focus, where it's just like, it's all like brought to you by anxiety. So
sponsored by anxiety. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yes,
yes. So I'm a huge procrastinator, and like it is like exactly what you're saying, Kelsey, where it's like writing a book about self-doubt. You're just like, what have I done? Like, I've picked the topic that's like the most impossible to be like, okay, so I'm just going to bring up every insecurity I've ever had and then be like, and put it on paper. That's so easy. yeah. So everyone told me like writing a book is going to be really hard, but I think I just like added a level of difficulty on myself by being like, okay, and I'm going to write, because I was sort of like, okay, I'm going to write this book about imposter syndrome, and then it will be cured because I'll have figured it out by the end. And of course, that's like never what happens when you do anything creative. You know, you're just like, oh, this is totally different from how I imagined in my head.
Yes. And your book also talks about your love-hate relationship with stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm, and here on Self Helpless, we are kind of a combination of those two things, because when we started the show 6 years ago, Delaney and I both did stand up. And then how many years ago was it, Del, that you stepped away?
I don't know. I think I feel like it's over 5 years now. I can't remember. Yeah.
So Delaney stepped away from it, and it's like now my, you know, full-time job and everything like that. But what has your experience been with stand up, and what are the love-hate aspects?
Yeah. So I, let's see, I am coming off a pretty long break. Like I guess I started stand up in like 2006, like really pursuing it regularly. And so, you know, I've been doing it for over a decade. And then when I was writing this book, I just realized I couldn't like write this book and do stand up at the same time. Like there was something about like mining all this personal information and like feeling very raw all the time. And like, obviously, when you're writing a book, you don't have that instant gratification you have with stand up, where you're like, here's my idea, and now I immediately know how these people feel about it. So yeah. I think it was like too confusing for my brain to like be going on stage in this sort of raw like state of mind, and then, you know, having a weird set and then not like taking it too personally, like more so than I probably would have before. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to step away, focus on one thing at one time. And weirdly, like taking a break from stand-up honestly feels like it was probably the best thing I've done as a stand-up, like for myself, because it just felt like it was a way to reset my brain and like reset like why I do it in the first place and like what I get out of it. Like the easiest way to really get that perspective was to step away from it. And that was so hard for me, because I think you guys probably know, like when you're a stand-up, you like eat, drink, breathe, sleep, stand up. And it's like really hard to kind of see outside of that tunnel vision sometimes and realize you're like a full person outside of comedy.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of shame in the stand up comedy business too, that if you aren't eating, sleeping, drinking stand up, that you're not cut out for it, or you're not working hard enough. And I find that when I'm in that mode of like, it's the only thing I'm doing, I'm not as creative. Like, I have to go
Right.
live to have experiences to write about, but there is a lot of shame in it. I'm always comparing myself to other people's like volume
Yeah.
of content they're creating.
So I think, yeah. So I think it's only been like later, like as I've gotten older, that I'm like, oh, it's okay. Like if I do stand up and my way of doing it or like my model of how it shows up in my life doesn't match up with like, you know, like this guy next to me or this woman or yeah, this person, like I, like there's no, it's supposed to be an art form that, you know, brings in like different sorts of thoughts and experiences. So like, why should your way of doing it have to look like everyone else's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt so much shame and I just felt so bad when I left because I felt like that lifestyle just didn't make me happy. Like I wouldn't
Yeah.
be able to come home to the same bed every night. And I
Right.
don't like being out at night. I don't really like traveling. It just, but I love comedy and so many
Yeah.
aspects of it, but I almost felt like, oh, I just can't hack it. You know, like it, that's what it felt like. Do you like the touring lifestyle? Does that excite you? Does that feel sustainable for you? Or have you kind of, what's your relationship with that specifically?
I am not built for the road. Like I will go out. Yeah, I will go out in like concentrate amounts. Like I'm doing some tour dates around this book. And, you know, my agent was just like, you're gone for a week and then I'll get you right back in your little home. You know, like I'm just like so, yeah, I think I'm just like not built for that sort of, I don't know, when you're younger, you know, there is sort of this novelty to it. You're like, oh my God, I'm in a hotel room. Like I'm here to like, I'm here in like Portland or whatever, and people are gonna pay to see me. But then, yeah, as I've gotten older, I'm just like, I think I like my routine, and I like I'm like a cat, like I'm very attached to my sense of place. So I think I'm like trying to figure out a way to do stand up that kind of works with those needs. And I've been lucky in that I've had like opportunities in like voiceover or like other stuff where I don't have to like solely rely on it for my whole income, because I know sometimes it's not a choice necessarily. You're just like trying to pay rent.
Right.
Yeah. And was that intentional for you? Like when you felt like, okay, stand up doesn't feel sustainable, that lifestyle, like all the time. Did you try to get into this other scope of stuff under the comedy umbrella, or did they kind of come up organically?
I would say a combination of both. I mean, I think that's the thing with like acting and writing, like there is so much, and even stand up, like there is, you can be doing all the things and like showing up and being diligent and have your head in the game. And it's still like, sometimes comes down to luck and timing. And I feel like I've, you know, been lucky to get, you know, like I got a voiceover job on like BoJack Horseman early on. And I feel like that ended up being like a show that was on a lot of people's radar. So then that kind of helped open up other voiceover opportunities. So I think there is things with like acting and stand-up opportunities and writing where it feels like, I feel like when you're on the outside of it or before you've gotten your first big break, it just seems so impossible. And it seems like the people who are doing well just like knew, you know, it's like that same feeling of when I was in elementary school, like they just somehow knew the steps to take to get where they are. But it is, I think it is important to remember there is still like luck involved and like things that are a little bit outside our control. And it's like, okay to not always be like, well, if I had just worked harder, I would be here. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Were there any essays in your book that you hesitant to include or almost didn't include?
Yeah, I like there's stuff around sexuality. Like I don't really talk a lot about, yeah, like my sex life or like romantic stuff on stage. So I think there was stuff just around how, you know, I'm not like a super sexual person, and it does feel like a kind of realm of like, you know, asexuality is like a spectrum as well. And sometimes just like my ambivalence towards sex, like I don't know like where the room is in the conversation for that. Cause I feel like, especially as a woman, sometimes that gets like put into like, maybe you haven't experienced real pleasure, you know, versus like, that's like actually just how you're built or your preference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner, Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Was there anything that was very helpful for the book writing process? Like, was there a time where, like, I really feel like I'm in the flow state and whatever mindset you were able to get into helped bring this out of you, or any other tools that may have helped?
Yeah, I'm someone who has to kind of trick myself into working because I have such a love-hate relationship with work where I'm like, you know, I like really like structure. But then if you like are like, okay, show up here at 8 a.m. I'm like, who are you? Like, don't tell me what to do. You know, like, it's like, what do I want? What do I actually want here? But yeah. So I would have to do things where I'd be like, okay, like, just sit down and just like open up the document and just like look over your stuff. You don't even need to, like, you don't have to commit to a certain amount of time. And it's just like, just starting is so big for me. It's just like that hurdle between being like, oh, I should work on this versus actually working on it. For some reason, it just feels like impossible every time. So I would just be like different ways of getting myself to just like open it up and start.
Yeah. Have you heard of the Pomodoro technique?
I have, but I've never tried it. I guess I've heard of it, but I haven't like explored it more than that.
That's the only thing in the past year that I've found to be a consistent way to trick myself into starting. Cause I agree. It's the same for me. It's like, just once I can start, then it's fine.
Yeah.
But it's just getting there. And yeah, I would be curious how you feel about it if you try it. It's just starting that timer for 25 minutes. There's something about seeing a clock going down that just works in some competitive way in my mind. I don't know. Why, but I just feel like, oh shit, I have to go now. I don't know.
No, that's true. Yeah. Cause I do feel like sometimes before a stand-up show, I'll be in that sort of like panic state of where you're a little bit like, okay, what am I doing? What do I want to try and stuff? And I'll find myself like coming up with ideas in that frame of mind. So I'm always like, how can I, you know, recreate this sense of urgency when I don't have a show?
Yeah, it's almost like you have to make a part of your brain kind of dumb for a second to like trick it into thinking that this is a significant countdown, even though it's not. But
yes,
I don't know. It taps into a weird thing.
Totally. And I also, because I was listening to a recent episode you guys did on sleep, and I am so sleep sensitive. Like I know I'm a totally different person, like without enough sleep versus enough sleep. So I'm always like working to have a more consistent sleep pattern. But then I do notice sometimes, you know, on a day when you have a really early flight or something and your sleep is just super messed up, I will notice like my brain kind of thinks in a more interesting way if I'm super sleep deprived. And then I'm like, this isn't good. Like, wait, I could be like having way better ideas if I just have a much more unhealthy life.
I agree, though. There are like weird hours of the night where it's like you happen to be up at 3 a.m. for some reason and you're like, wow, I cannot turn my brain off right now, but this is also not sustainable.
Yeah, it's almost like a version of being on a drug or something.
Yeah. The high thoughts when you're not high. Those are my favorite. I'm like, wow. And then sometimes I remember, though, that I am high. I'm like, oh, I forgot I did that.
Did take that edible.
I'm glad the Pomodoro method worked. I wish it worked better for me because I, like, when I hear the alarm, I'm just like, fuck you. I know that's not a real deadline. A real alarm. Yes. So I'm like, God damn it. I wish. Sometimes it does work. When did you know that you wanted to pursue a career in comedy, and how did the people around you react to that?
I was interested in comedy, I think, starting in high school in terms of being like, oh, this is like actually something you can pursue. But I'm sort of the generation that grew up absorbing comedy pre-YouTube and like pre-the-internet. So it wasn't quite as like widely understood that like anyone can do this. And like, it's like, all you have to do is pick up your phone and like record a video or something. But I think I just, something about it appealed to me. And, you know, I felt like I could be funny just like around friends, but I was never like the class clown or anything. So I saw, it was more like one of those back burner dreams where I was like, okay, this is something I like, but I don't know like what my entry point would be. And then I just tried an open mic. Like, I still am sort of like, how did I do that? Looking back on it, but I tried an open mic. Like, a friend and I were home from college for the summer, and we were like, let's just try to go up one time, like before we go back to school. And we both like agreed to do it. And I remember my first time was like my birthday. So I was like, I mind that, where I was just like, it's my birthday, please laugh, you know, like whatever, whatever I can do to like garner sympathy out of these people. And it went well enough that I think I was like, oh, wow. Like, I had not even considered the fact that I might like want to do it again. But I didn't pursue it regularly until after college. Because I think I was still just like, I can't believe this is something I could do like full time. It just seemed so like one of those like imagined fairy tale careers.
Yeah. That's such a funny hack to starting stand-up, is like, start on your birthday.
Yeah.
And like, people will probably be, because I think that's half the battle, is if the first time, if it goes well enough to just make you feel that you want to try it again, it's huge. That first time is, I think, so important.
It is, because then it's like, you know, you might have a year where it's like, you're pretty bad the whole
so
you're right, you just need that like first hit. Yeah.
Or you can keep telling people it's your first time, the first like 20 times. And then like, oh, good job. So proud of you.
That is a good ad.
I may have done that a few times.
No, you gotta figure out whatever methods.
Oh my God. So in your book, you talk about that you have named your depression Brenda, and which is so fucking funny. Can you talk about Brenda and your experience with her and how she shows up in your life?
Yeah. So interestingly, like, I was first diagnosed with depression like in college, and I was also struggling with like an eating disorder at the time. And I think sometimes like this happens for people where like the eating disorder or whatever the other dysfunctional behavior you have is just kind of a mask for depression or like something else you're going through. And that was sort of the case for me. Like, the eating habits were kind of a way of avoiding the depression. And so I had to take time off from school and sort of work on that. And that was actually when I first, I think, considered that I could try stand up to begin with, because I went on antidepressants for the first time. And I don't know, there's this like honeymoon period when you're first on antidepressants, where it is this weird, it's almost like getting glasses when you have, you know, not been able to see like perfectly clearly, where you're just like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know you could like experience life in this register. Like, you know, like everything looks brighter, people seem nicer. And I think that honestly, that little boost is probably what first gave me the confidence to even try stand up, because I was so like suddenly open to like what my life could be in a way that I hadn't been for so long. And I had been in such a rut and so stuck. So I think, yeah, I think weirdly, like I could thank my depression for like leading me to stand up, but I think it's also like having a depressive brain that kind of can make it really hard sometimes as a chosen path.
When did you know that you needed to seek help for that? Or like, when did you know that's okay, it's time for, you know, to see somebody or antidepressants, or was there anything that kind of happened leading up to that?
Yeah. I mean, I was like struggling with restrictive eating and like anorexic behavior. And I think it got to a point where I was like trying to address it at school, but it just wasn't working. So I had to, yeah, take time off. And I went to like, you know, an outpatient treatment center. And that was where like, you know, they pair you with a therapist and a psychiatrist. And that's where I sort of was able to put a name to what was going on. But it did feel like there were other people at the treatment center who were like a lot more resistant to being there. And I do feel like maybe I was different in the sense that I like knew something was wrong and I wanted to address it. And I wasn't like, the way I'm doing it is working. And I'm like, everything's fine. Like I was like, I wanted to like live a different way than I was. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Can you share your thoughts on the concept of making art about nothing?
Yeah, I think, you know, I started comedy in DC and I feel like it's a pretty good city to start comedy in that it's a good scene. There's a good amount of stage time, but you're kind of under the radar as opposed to like a more industry city like New York or LA or yeah. So I think it's like a good place to find your feet and figure out your voice. But I was like, you know, when I started, there weren't that many other women of color. It was still like primarily straight dudes and a lot of, you know, white men. And I think I noticed that their comedy would be sort of about just like day-to-day observations and stuff. But it felt like if you were a certain race or you had like sort of one specific identity that made you stick out, people would kind of expect you to talk about that or like address it in some way, or that would be kind of your whole angle on everything. And I never really approached comedy that way, not intentionally, but I just like, I'm a very like introverted person. And I always like the stuff that's going on in my head is very not much about my outer identity. So I think I would just talk about that. And people would always be like, oh, that's so refreshing. Like you're a woman of color, but you like, don't really rely on that. And so I think it made me have a weird relationship to like wanting to talk about, you know, being a woman or being a woman of color, where I was like, is that bad then to like bring it up at all? Like it sort of made me feel like I was being praised for not talking about that stuff. But then I was like, but is that kind of, am I like undermining myself by not mentioning it at all? So I feel like I had to kind of come to my own understanding of like, no, it's fine to talk about like whatever you want to talk about. And it's like other people putting on you what that means or what that doesn't mean. Again, it's like none of my business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I am overwhelmed with ideas for things every single day, whether it's jokes, TV show ideas, books, podcast, yeah, whatever, overwhelmed. Do you feel that way? Like, is there a certain way that you organize and like prioritize and implement your creative ideas or projects in your life?
I wish there was.
Please help. Asking for a friend, and that friend is me.
I'm like, you guys specialize in talking to people who seem to know what they're doing. Maybe you could help me, because I don't. I have several like abandoned Google Docs with just like one sentence, and I'm just like, what did this mean? Just like a weird communication from my past self. But it's constantly like a battle of like, what do I prioritize? My new thing is just being like, okay, right now you can only focus on like two things. What are those two things going to be? Because otherwise it's just like, yeah, like I work on something for 5 minutes and then I forget about it completely. So for me now, it's kind of, because I am a perfectionist. So it's kind of just being like, you can only handle so much at once. Like some people are multitasking geniuses, but I need like one task given to me and like, just finish this and then you can move on to your next thing.
Yeah, makes sense. I resonate with that a lot.
Yeah.
Yes, same. This is a lot of perfectionism that we've been battling over the years on the podcast, and
yeah,
it's a tough one. Are there a couple like main takeaways that you hope people have from reading your book?
Yeah, I think for me it's just airing a lot of the feelings that you guys talk about on your podcast that are like messier, uglier, like, you know, jealousy or shame or like comparing or perfectionism, where it is kind of messy. And it's not always like, you know, like I feel like on social media, there is this whole, I feel like the conversation with like mental health has been really opened up. And a lot of these things have been really opened up, but I still feel like engaging with it online and like reading a meme that really resonates with you or something is still not the same as like actually talking to your friend that like maybe brings up some insecurity you have. Like, those conversations are a lot less clean, and like, you both might walk away feeling a little weird. And I think I guess in the book I was kind of trying to capture just like how messy real life is, and how it isn't just like, you name it and now you know it and now you move on and you, go get it, girl boss, you know, like, like, it's sort of an ongoing negotiating of yourself and like, you know, two steps forward, three steps back, like, it never fully ends.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Has there been any points in your career where you kind of felt like hopeless, whether it was like work felt inconsistent or there was low revenue months, so you felt like, this is never going to be my reality of being able to do this stuff full time, or just anything like that? And how did you like care for yourself and help yourself out of that?
Yeah. I mean, I think with the low periods, it really is like trying to, for me, it's like trying to broaden the world outside of, again, if it's like the insecurity is particularly around career or relationship, like just trying to remember the world is bigger than that one thing. And like, you know, either whether that's relationships outside of work or I mean, I found as I've gotten older, like really it is like spending time with people you love is ultimately just the best out of everything. So I think just remembering those things, like the small things are kind of what keeps the big picture like in perspective. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's such a
good and those low periods are like, they are going to come. And especially like for me with like depression, anxiety, like there are just times, like, I mean, I have like especially worse anxiety and depression before my period. And so I know like no matter what, every month, like a certain week is gonna suck. And just like remembering that that's like just gonna be that week, and like what, knowing that, how am I gonna like deal with it, or am I just gonna be kinder to myself while that's happening rather than being like, why do you have the worst brain?
Do you, speaking of that sort of thing, do you ever feel like you have PMDD, or have you been seen?
Okay, that is what I struggle with.
Okay, it feels so hard to know, because when you have PMS, let's just say it's regular PMS, those feelings do like they're noticeable. And so I've always had trouble differentiating between what is PMS and what is PMDD when you can't have somebody else's experience, like you only know your own. I feel like it's hard to quantify between like you and a friend, if you're just talking about it, how anxious somebody feels or how depressed somebody feels, you know?
Yeah, no, that's so true. Cause it is like such a, I don't know, it can be so such a gray area of like, when does it cross the line into this other thing?
And
for me, I just found like, as I got a little older, I would just notice like my mood would get like significantly worse, like in the 10 days leading up to my period, or like my ability to concentrate, or like just my irritability would like, there would be like a distinct shift in like how I was doing before. Cause I know what you mean. It's like that mood stuff can be like all over the place all the time, where it's just like a situational thing or so sometimes it can be hard to chart, but it did feel like a big enough distinction for me.
It's goddamn hormones. Why is
it so fucked hard? Up. So unfair.
Oh my God. I know. We could probably do an entire other episode with you on that stuff, because that's been a big topic with me the past year. It's just hormone, IUD, those sort of things. It's just like crazy how much it can really impact you. Like that if it is a large chunk of the month, it's like, goddamn, you feel like the second you're done with it, it's right back to it again.
Yeah. And that's like another one of those things too, where there's like, not that we aren't able to have those conversations, but sometimes I do feel shame where I'm like, people are like, oh, they hate being told, like, as women, like, we're so emotional, we're so irrational. And I'm like, sometimes I do feel like I don't, like, I feel like someone else is controlling my body and my mind, and I cannot explain my behavior. And I'm sorry, but that, like, I don't trust myself either. So I don't know what you want to do with that information.
It's so hard. It's like hard to feel grounded in your own body when it's literally changing all the time. Every single month it goes through this variety of shit, and you're somehow trying to feel centered on a daily basis. Like, what the fuck? That's just like an uphill battle always.
I know.
I am dying to know about your perspective, just because you've mentioned, you know, anxiety, depression, imposter syndrome. How do you feel about the idea or concept of fame? Does it freak you out? Does it excite you? Do you feel neutral about it, just being in this industry of entertainment?
Yeah, I, surprise, surprise, another thing I have a love-hate relationship with. Because I think, you know, a lot of us get into these creative professions, or like, especially stand-up, there is a part of like, you feel seen when people like laugh at your jokes or like connect with you. And so I think that is what is gratifying about it to me, is like being able to like translate like the inside of my head to other people and have them like understand and relate to it. But then I also, you know, I'm kind of a shy person and introverted. So sometimes like engaging with those same people after the show is like, no, I can't, like, I don't, I just put me like back in my cave or whatever. You know, like it feels like I want like the best of both. But I don't want to like deal with anything in between. But yeah, I constantly struggle with like wanting attention. And then when I get it, just being like, oh, this is not what I wanted though. Like, this is, cause you know, when people's eyes are on you, not everyone's going to like you. Not everyone's going to like have things to say that you want to hear. So I think it's like, again, I am trying to espouse that, the quote I said earlier, where I really like, I don't read comments. I don't read like reviews. Like, I'm just like, maybe that makes me like weak-willed or something, but it just my brain will like take a little thing and just like run with it. So I'm like, it's better I just don't know.
I feel the same completely.
I feel like I had a mentality for a while that I needed to force myself to read comments because it was gonna give me a thicker skin, and then it would make things easier going forward. And I've just learned for myself that it's like, there is nothing that is ever going to make me used to somebody saying something mean online. Like, it will always hurt my feelings. It will. I just think I will always feel sensitive to that. And I'm not sure that inundating myself with every comment on the internet is the right way to go.
And it's also just remembering that, like, I don't know, even when I have a judgmental thought about someone else, it is like, you know, what they say, it's like, sometimes that's a reflection of some insecurity you're feeling about yourself. So then it's like, all these people online, like, who even knows what their intentions are with writing this thing? And you're only getting like one little sliver of information about where it's coming from, who's saying it. It just, it's not fair to like, then just be like, okay, you're right, I do have a weird voice or whatever it is, you know.
I was just listening to another podcast where a comedian had deleted, or he had hired somebody to do his social media, so he doesn't see it anymore. And that, I believe he had a meeting with, was it with Instagram? And I'm probably butchering this, but that the science behind why social media is bad for you isn't necessarily because you're seeing the negative comments. There's something very detrimental about seeing the positive comments, because it's giving you that chemical rush that is also not normal to be feeling that all the time. And then you start to get used to wanting that all the time.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of interesting to be like, oh yeah, it's not even the bad ones that are always going to put you in a weird mood.
Yeah. And I've like been pretty conscious with myself about stepping away from checking it. Like, I'll post now even less than I used to, but I won't like scroll anymore. I like won't really look at other people's things. And you know, there are downfalls to that. You feel like you're out of the loop sometimes. You don't know like what is going on. You have to hear it like third party from someone else. But it is like, I don't know, it just feels like it has cleared up a lot of just noise in my brain that was hard for me to be able to like comb through without losing focus very easily.
Yeah. I think a little over 2 years ago now, I deleted all my all my social media, and it helped me mentally so much.
Yeah.
But it's still a gray area. There's still a little FOMO and weirdness around it. And it's like just nothing is all good or all bad. It's all just right smack dab in the middle. And it's like, I left stand up. I deleted my social media. I made myself way, way less visible. And that didn't feel good either. So it's like it's like constantly trying to figure out like, okay, how do I be seen enough to do the things that I like to do for my career, but not so out there that I feel like I'm inundated with all these different opinions and, you know, all different angles. So it's just like a constant struggle, I feel like. Is there anything that you wish you would have known earlier about, I don't know, like if you could go back in time and tell yourself when you were first starting in this like creative career path or unconventional career path, like what do you wish you would have known earlier?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think probably there is no, like, I mean, it's always easier to say this on the other side of it, but really like, nothing you get or achieve is going to like, you know, solve everything for you or like fix everything.
Yeah.
But like,
that's a good one.
But I understand that it's like, I remember being on the other side of it. And it's like, well, easy for you to say, you know, like you're not, you know, trying to like figure everything out, but it just like, yeah, I feel like some of my lowest points weirdly have been like when I was, you know, on paper doing the best or like killing it like career wise, where it's just like, I think the fact that everyone's like, oh my God, you got so much going on and you don't feel different inside is such a like alienating feeling where you're like, but I don't feel better, you know, where you're just like, wait, am I just like, is success like not for me? Like, do I just have to keep like seeking forever? But I think it's just remembering that that's like one layer of your life and it's not like always getting to the core of like what's going on with you.
Yeah. Oh, well said. yes.
That is so well put. Especially because in this business, if you are not doing it full time, a lot of the time it means you're working a job you don't want to be working.
Yeah.
And there's such desperation in those early years when you're pursuing an unconventional career where you just want so badly for there to be one thing that really will change your life. And at least in stand-up, it's just not like that anymore. It's not, you don't do the Tonight Show once and then get a sitcom. It's just, it is so much more, there are a million doors that you have to walk through first.
Yeah, and just remembering that like once, you know, your dream becomes like your reality or whatever, like you're still a human, you're still going to have bad days, you're still going to have days where you're like, oh, like, fuck this, you know, like, I don't want to be here or whatever. And remembering that that's like normal. And it's like, okay, if not every day, you're like, I'm just so grateful for all of this. And I'm the luckiest girl in the world, you know, like, it's okay, you're still a person in the world. And the world is hard. Life is, can be a struggle.
Yeah, it still works.
So like, let's say that you got a phone call tomorrow and it was the biggest opportunity of your career to date, whatever that means for you. And you felt the imposter syndrome kicking in really quickly. What would you do for yourself? Are there certain exercises or go-to things that would help you kind of show up as comfortably as possible for that opportunity?
I mean, I've noticed for myself, like I've talked to friends about it where even when I get good news, I'm like the period where I actually enjoy it before like the worry comes in or like the, oh my God, I'm going to get fired or whatever it is like sometimes like, you know, within like 2 minutes, like 1 minute I'll be excited and the next minute I'll be like, oh my God, why did they pick me? Like I'm so in over my head. So I think now I've just made such a conscious effort, even if it doesn't always work, like just kind of faking it for myself where I like, if something good happens or even like a tiny thing where it's like, oh my gosh, this person I really respect said something nice to me after a show, like just forcing myself to like sit with it for a second and be like, that's really nice. Like that is like a moment that you should celebrate that it happened, or, you know, you had this cool moment of connection with a barista or whatever it is. It feels like it's so easy for me to focus on the big bad things or the things I didn't get. And I like forget that there are all these like tiny nice things happening all the time and really like forcing myself to acknowledge them and like appreciate that they happened.
Yeah. That's a great one. That's such a good reminder.
Definitely. Yeah. Is there any other questions you have, Kels?
I don't think so. How about you, Del?
You've answered all of mine. Oh, is there anything else that you would want somebody to know who's tuning in, who is kind of going through a low period, whether it's personally, professionally, things just aren't feeling like they're working out the way that they want? Is there anything that you'd like to say to that person?
Yeah, I would say, I don't know, like just being nicer to yourself. I think it's so easy to compound like being in a low place, but then being harder on yourself for like not figuring it out or not snapping out of it. And I just think like, at least if you can meet yourself in a place where a friend would, where they just like are coming to you with a sense of like, this is hard. And I know this sucks right now. Like just also being able to meet yourself there a little bit, I think it can just give you a little bit of space that can feel really important in those times.
Yes. Love it.
That's great. Yeah. Oh man. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Gosh, thank you for having me.
Huge. Speaking of things to like celebrate for yourself, huge congratulations on your book. It's really, really amazing.
Yes. And where can people find you, your book, all that good stuff?
Okay. So my website is aparnacomedy.com, and that sort of links to tour dates, book info, social media. So that feels like a good place to start.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, thank you. Great talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, what a fun conversation. Fun, deep, all the things. Like I especially enjoyed just asking her questions from somebody who like left stand up and her weird kind of like love-hate relationship with it.
Yeah, she's such a sweetheart. That was just fun to talk to her, and my god, she has accomplished so much. Her credits are bananas. So
it's very cool that she found like a way to integrate that in a way that makes sense for her, you know, like what she wants her lifestyle to be. That's very inspiring.
So remember, go pick up her book, Unreliable Narrator. It is out tomorrow, September 19th.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have a segment, Del?
I do. I had to have a good shit. So it's my favorite time of the year, Fishmas, which is my made up family holiday.
Fishmas.
Yes. So I celebrate it with my dad and my stepmom and my siblings. But we birthed it during the pandemic. We were all just like, it was summertime. It was sad and uncertain and all this stuff. Yeah. And we're like, let's just fucking throw a Christmas party. And so we got out decorations and we did a Secret Santa, like all this stuff, and we have just kept that tradition for the last, I don't know, 3+ years now.
Whoa.
3 years probably, maybe even longer. When was it? 2020 was the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, and I love it. We listen to Christmas music, we eat sub sandwiches, we have chai tea lattes, we dress up like somebody in our family. So we've dressed up as my dad and my brother this year, as one of my sisters. We exchange a Secret Santa gift with each other that has some really ridiculous rule, like you have to get something that the person like wouldn't probably like opposite of their personality.
Oh yeah,
just like really silly dumb things, and we come up with new rules and like traditions every single year. And I fucking love it. I fucking love it. But we celebrate on August 25th every year.
I love that.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just so fun and silly. And everybody like brings a lot of just creativity to it. We play a lot of board games. There's some day drinking involved. I mean, it's just a good time. And it's like reminds me like, you can make your own traditions. Like you can make your own family traditions.
Absolutely.
You can do whatever the fuck you want, you know?
Yeah.
So Merry Fishmas to everybody.
Merry Fishmas, one and all.
By the time this airs, we will have celebrated it last month. So
there
you go.
I think it's so great. You guys have such a special family.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. That's really sweet.
Yeah, you guys are the best people. I feel very lucky to have spent time around you guys as a family.
Oh, that's so nice. Oh, yeah, we spent Christmas together.
Yeah.
That was so nice.
And then summer's at, you know, the 2020.
Summer's at the pool.
At the pool. Yeah. Your family is the type of family that really makes you feel immediately part of them. And it's that's such a nice thing.
Oh, I will let them know. They will appreciate that. They're wonderful. That's so sweet. Oh. We also bring out a Festivus poll, if anybody's wondering.
Fuck yeah.
Throwback to, you know, a nod at Seinfeld.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Yes.
what do you got going on?
I also have a good shit. So I saw our Lord and Savior, Beyonce Christ, saw her in concert with one of my best friends, Jamie, and it was so good, you guys. It was so good. I cried as That's soon awesome. As she came on stage.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it's just so emotional because, well, first of all, I think I mentioned before the concert on a recent episode that people have been treating this tour especially like it's their adult prom. There was a lot of artwork that came with her album, The Renaissance, a lot of really amazing outfits she wore. And so people took the themes of that and people were wearing outfits that they kind of made themselves. And, you know, Jamie and I got dressed up for it. And there's something so special, my God. I mean, I get goosebumps thinking about it. It's just crazy to me that one human can have so much influence for good. Like she really, that stadium was full of so much love and so much just adoration of her. And when she came out and, you know, she started singing, and then there was a moment where she just like stopped and was looking out at the crowd and we're all screaming. And I just felt so emotional because it's like, oh my God, we are in the same room as this person who has created so much music that is, I feel like her music is so empowering. It's very empowering, at least for me. And just makes me feel so good. Makes me feel like the most badass version of myself when I listen to it. I feel like she really taps into those parts of you. And so, yeah, I was crying then. And then this whole tour has been bringing her daughter, Blue Ivy, out on stage with her. So hers and Jay-Z's daughter. And she's dancing in the tour for like a chunk of the tour. And people go fucking crazy. And she's so cute. She must be maybe 12 or 13 at this point. And so at the end of her dancing, she waves at the crowd and we're all going crazy and screaming for Blue Ivy. And then this big screen on the stage is like showing Beyonce's face looking at Blue Ivy. And I just was like, instant tears. Because, you know, obviously all this, you know, all this stuff with my mom. To see Beyonce, oh my God, it was like a parent couldn't look more proud of their child. So, and it's like, what a special thing that they get to experience as a mother and daughter, that Beyonce gets to share her crowds with her daughter, and that we all just immediately love her daughter so much. And it was really special. There were so many very special moments, and just the concert itself was incredible. Was just dancing my ass off, had the best time. It was amazing. I wish I could just live that night over and over again.
Oh, I'm so glad you had a good time.
Thank you.
Yeah, you have, since I've met you, you've always fucking loved Beyonce. Since day one, I've met you.
She is. I'm not religious.
You've seen her several times, right?
That was my fifth time. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I don't think I've ever seen an artist that many times live.
No. Yeah.
The most I've ever seen was Tenacious D, and I've seen them three times.
Hold on, maybe it was my fourth. Hold on, let me think. Let me count. I saw her as Destiny's Child when I was in high school. Okay. And then
I'll allow it.
And then Beyonce and Jay-Z together in Seattle. And then no, it was my fourth time. I'm sorry, I misspoke. My fourth time. But yeah, I've seen her a lot. Nice. I'm not a religious person, but she is, I treat her music like she's like it's my church. Yeah, like that is the people go to church to like hear music and feel inspired and feel strong and restored, and that's what her music does for me. So
yes, oh, I love it. And I just didn't she have an album called Lemonade?
Lemonade, yes.
Yes. And we haven't announced this yet, but we are officially with the Lemonada Network.
So yes!
This is our podcast Beyonce moment.
Yes, yes.
Lemonade, Lemonada, baby. Yeah. We haven't talked about it on the show, but we are so excited to be part of this network that with so many incredible, talk about powerful like women and powerful people and inspiring things. But just all the programming they have just like life-changing stuff, like the shows. I mean, Kelsey and I are so grateful to be here in this like iteration of our podcast career. So
yeah, I mean, the Lemonada Network, we're talking like Julia Louis-Dreyfus's podcast, Samantha Bee's podcast, Elise Myers, like we're such incredible women. And yeah, if you guys haven't checked out their other podcasts, you should. We are in some seriously amazing company. So
yeah,
we couldn't be more excited. But so that was my good shit. And then Chad and I are seeing Incubus in concert tomorrow. This is like my concert week.
Oh, wow.
And one of my other very favorite bands. I'm sure that will be my next good shit segment, is talking about how that concert went.
Love it. And we do have an iTunes review of the episode.
Yeah.
This is from Chel Roswell. It says, I love you guys. I'm a fan of all three of you. I'm a female comedian, artist, and entrepreneur. Awesome.
Aww.
You guys are awesome, honest, and helpful. Feels like listening to a conversation of three of my besties. Also going to make sure I floss like a boss. So thanks for the tips, Kelsey. Did you talk about flossing on the podcast?
I did. I was talking about how there are, when I go to the dentist, I get these really good tips. Like, I think the last time I went, I got the tip of don't use the Glide floss because it's too slippy. Like, it doesn't grip onto the things that need to grip onto. And then also you should slowly work it in so it doesn't like pop up into your gums because it's damaging.
Yes.
I've got good flossing tips.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. It's so funny. My dentist just said to try to do the double thick floss.
Sure. Yeah. That's,
I don't know. There's a lot going on in that world. Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you, Chell.
Yeah, thank you so much for that iTunes review. And I'm glad that the flossing tips have helped.
That's fabulous. Yeah, and if you want to leave an iTunes review, feel free to do it. It'll probably get read on the show. I mean, really. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, guys, we hope that you enjoyed this episode. And we hope you're having an awesome week so far. And we'll talk to you next time.
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Self Helpless Podcast. You can find our Patreon community, merch, and our individual work at selfhelplesspodcast.com. We'd be thrilled if you shared this episode with a friend, or feel free to post it on Instagram and tag @selfhelplesspodcast so we can repost you and say thank you. Yeah.